Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and today I'm super excited to be joined by Brett Salarkas. Now, I'll introduce Brett very shortly, but before we get into the episode, I just want to mention a couple of things. It'd be amazing if you wouldn't mind going to your platform that you're listening to this podcast on and leaving us a, well, hopefully a 5-star review that if you think you get value from it, that'll definitely help us reach more people and hopefully impact more people in a positive way as well. And also, you can also sign up for the waiting list for our Wellbeing Wizard AI tool, which is designed to help teachers teach wellbeing more efficiently, save a lot of time, a lot of features that ChatGPT can't necessarily do. And that is going to be ready very shortly. So we'll put the waiting list link in the show notes as well. But today's guest, Brett Salarkas. Now, Brett is one of the most influential educators, not only in Australia, but around the world. He's currently the Education Ambassador, so Hewlett-Packard, where he is doing some great work in schools, helping them with their technology and STEM programs. And he tells a great story about a group of students he's worked with recently who are actually over in America at NASA at the moment in a robotics competition. He will share that story. Now, this is a raw episode. Brett really opens up. I asked him how he got into education, but then how he got into what he's doing today. And that path is pretty amazing and it's very raw. Hopefully, it will encourage people to open up a bit as well. Because, yes, teaching can be a stressful job, but away from school as well, things happen. And something happened to Brett and why he was actually principal at a school. And I'm not going to share anything now, but be sure to listen. And yeah, it's re really raw. But he shares a number of wonderful stories. He's a great storyteller, lots of takeaways. And I think we should get right into it. So, without further ado, please welcome Brett. Brett, welcome to the
Good to be here, brother.
podcast. Now, mate, really excited for this episode. I know you've got lots of great energy, some great stories to tell, and I know that you'll give a lot of value to everyone listening. Hopefully, that we can apply and take away in our teaching practices and in our life in general. And always like to ask guests how they got into education, but also a bit about their background. How did you, or what's your background, and how did you get into education?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously, I feel sorry. Actually, I feel really sorry for your listeners of your podcast, because to people who are viewing, they'd be able to visibly see probably the answer there. If you ask me what my background is, clearly, former male model. And the listeners are just going to have to imagine ridiculously handsome,
You are a
tall,
beautiful man, Brett.
long flowing hair, for the no, actually shaved head goatee. I am a big boy though, I was 6'3" and an ex rugby player. I guess, do you know what? For those who do know their footy, I'm as a larger gent. I did play in the front row, and for those people who know their rugby, the front rowers are the ones who are in the mix of all the argy bargy. They're the ones who don't get the score, the tries, or have the glory, but they pick the ball up and they're the meatheads that run straight into oncoming traffic to be tackled and really take a wallop so that other people can benefit from. And every true front rower that I know, because you have to have the appropriate mindset. I know you're into a lot of well-being stuff. You have to have the appropriate mindset to be a front rower. You have to be the type of person who can, all right, I'm going to run straight into trouble. I'm going to do something that's probably going to hurt me. I'm not going to be able to score many tries. I'm not going to be able to get very far. I'm not going to be able to do tremendously well statistically. But if I take enough hits, other people will be able to score. Other people will be able to have succeed, and I will do something that is greater than me, and I'll be able to support the team. Anyone who's a true front rower, that's very that rings true for their mentality, their mindset, and I think that is just a perfect, I guess, breeding ground almost for an educator, someone who's not going to be drowning themselves in glory, not going to be standing up on podiums and breaking champagne bottles and saying, look, I come first, I'm best teacher, end of year, all that sort of stuff. It is about doing those hard yards, sometimes taking the hit, having those really bad days for the glory of other people, for the children in our care and helping them have success down the line. So I think there's great synergy in the mindset of the rugby front rower, the prop forward, and the right mindset of the teacher who is other person centered.
Absolutely. I love that analogy. And I think having a sporting background myself, my sport was cricket and like football was in Australian rules football. And just learned so much about that as well, like about teamwork, I guess being a role model as well for younger players or whatever that might be. And so many things translate. And I really love that. And I guess you were a teacher.
Yep.
But you end up becoming...
After my modelling career.
Modelling first, teaching comes second part-time.
Yeah.
So, but you've become one of the like leading, most influential educators, not only in Australia, but the world. Mm-hmm. So how did you transition... Not you're not teaching in a classroom now or at a school. How did you transition from being a teacher at a school and starting Aussie Ed, which was one of the biggest platforms in Australia for educators, and then now you're ambassador at HP, Hewlett-Packard Education. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have a deep breath. I know I've been jovial. You work a lot in well-being. I'm going to do something a little bit unusual, and I wasn't even thinking about doing this until just that second as you asked this question.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a little bit raw with you. So about 12 years ago, so I've got a whole bunch of children. I was in a Catholic school at the time, had been, you know, I've had experience as a deputy, I've had experience as an acting principal, center of the sort of school, and teaching was my life. Teaching was my life. And at 12 years ago, maybe even a little bit longer now, like my world sort of really, really turned upside down in a big way. I kind of lost everything. My marriage fell apart is what had happened. And just, you know what? I couldn't, I struggled with it. I actually struggled with it big time. And I couldn't feel, I felt like anything I took away from the marriage would mean I was taking away from my own kids. And as a result, basically, I was actually living in a men's shelter with 12 men, well, 11 other men. There was 12 of us. And a lot of these guys, I lived there for 8 months. A lot of these guys were transitioning out of prison and had a range of different addictions and things like that. It was really, really hard living. And I was actually acting principal at the time. So I would leave this place and it was all big share showers and everything like that. So I didn't really like that. So I would sneak into school crazy early and shower at school and then get dressed into my suit and go down to the shops then and have some breakfast and sort of hid that from the whole world. And I was at my absolute lowest and I was sort of stripped of everything that I thought my self-identity was about. Like I thought I was about the big family, the school leader, all that sort of stuff. And like community sort of pillar, blah, 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 blah. And it was hard. It was hard. It kind of broke me. And when you're stripped of everything that you have and even your self-worth, your question and your dignity and stuff, I guess you find out what you're really made out of, what you really value. And when I had nothing, like nothing, what I had was my love of teaching and my nerdiness about tech and stuff like that. So Twitter was a thing. It was cool. It was still relatively new. And in a weird way, so you asked about Aussie Ed. Very few people know. So Aussie Ed in its prime was the largest online network of teachers in Australia. We would have we would meet every Sunday night. On a quiet night, we would have about 500 or so teachers collaborating. On a big night, you'd have anywhere from about 15,000 to 20,000 teachers online.
Oh, that's huge.
And the tweet reach on that, if you think like 20,000 people each having several thousand followers each, the tweet reach, we would trend in New Zealand, we would trend in Australia, we would trend in the US. Like the tweet reach was into the millions, like literally into the millions. It, like a lot of people who were doing statistics for their PhD would reach out and contact me. And there's been a number of PhD data analysis done on the Aussie Ed sort of network, because it was they found it very, very interesting that Australia was, I guess it was unusual from a statistical point of view. It was certainly one of the largest ed chats on the planet, top five easily.
Yep.
But that started because I just needed to reach out. Actually, I was a broken man and I needed to reach out. So I started tweeting about education and I used the hashtag AussieEd. And it was 3 months of talking to nobody from the men's shelter until the first person actually responded using the hashtag AussieEd as well. It was 3 months of me just doing something and speaking. And what it kind of did was it taught me a couple of things. It taught me that actually people valued what I had to say.
Mm.
Gave me confidence that actually what I was saying was useful and people wanted to hear, and more people wanted to connect, and people wanted something authentic. They didn't want propaganda sort of shoved down their throat. They didn't want system whatever. Or they, you know what, they want to beyond their system. So often if you're, you know, if you're in Vic Department of Education or New South Wales, or if you're in Catholic education, or you're in a particular independent school, you often only get fed professional development and you only hear voices from within that jurisdiction, within that boundary. People wanted to hear what was happening in the other state, in the other jurisdiction, in the other thing. Like we're all educators trying to do the same thing. Like we're all trying to figure out what the politicians are forcing us to do, navigate what our principals want, work within the system and regulations of the system, and you know, manage parents that are either passionate or the opposite of that. And then at the same time, the most important thing, care for the kids that are in our supervision. And there's some tremendous commonalities there. And that gave me confidence to actually raise my voice. It's like I had a new life. Like I became like a new man, like a Pokemon. I evolved. but I kind of learned. It's just quite funny. Like when I had nothing, I learned that what I had was useful to everyone. And then I've gone on like you know, strength from there. And now like I get invited to speak around the world, and you know, and I'm the voice for a HP, like a big multinational. I'm their education voice, and like it's my life is tremendous, better than it ever could have or would have been otherwise. Like I've got a charmed life now. I just had to go through a little bit of pain to get to it. But it's when you talk about well-being and resilience and all that sort of stuff, like sometimes it is the hardships that, you know, that forge us to have the strength and resilience and to be able to do wonderful things. It actually reminds me of that. There's a fascinating, one of my favorite ex principals once told me this story. Well, not me. It was, I can't remember if it was a staff day or may have been to the student body. But he told this story of a boy who was out exploring in the backyards and the woods nearby or something like that. And he came across a cocoon that was on a branch. And the branch had fallen and it was on the ground. And he looked at that and thought, well, if he leaves it there, you know, that cocoon's going to rot or something's going to come along and the butterfly or the caterpillar inside is going to die. So he thought he'd do the right thing and rescue this cocoon. So he very, very carefully picks up the cocoon and he takes it back to his house and puts it in like a, leans it in a little jar and puts a light on it and cares for it. And every day he watches this cocoon and he can, when he shines a light, he can kind of see the, the caterpillar inside sort of changing and metamorphosing and all that sort of stuff. And then he gets very, very excited. One day he comes home from school and he sees there's a little rip, very small rip, a very small tear in the cocoon. And you can see that the butterfly is starting to emerge from the cocoon. And he watches it, and then he realizes with great distress that the butterfly is actually stuck and it can't get out of the cocoon. Mm. So he runs downstairs and he gets a little pair of tweezers and some scissors, and he very, very, very carefully actually peels back the cocoon and cuts away to make the slit wider. And the butterfly is able to easily sort of crawl out and crawl up to the branch, but the wings were all very, very crinkled, and that butterfly was never able to fly. And the story goes that years later, he's talking to a biologist or of some sort, and he learns that when a butterfly emerges from the cocoon, the hole that they squeeze through is purposefully very, very tight. And they have to struggle. They have to struggle and fight for their life to squeeze out of the cocoon. And what happens in that squeeze, it actually pushes a lot of the blood from inside the body down the little veins and everything of the wing and wings, and it actually pushes blood into the wings that lets them unfold. And then that allows in the butterfly to have wings that work. And he realized, has this moment, this epiphany of making it easy, too easy for the butterfly. He actually limited the potential of the butterfly. That butterfly was never able to fly. But having that struggle allowed that butterfly to have and extend those beautiful wings and reach what his potential was and actually be able to fly, and do what butterflies do. So I think sometimes I look at myself, I had this normal life, was doing everything as you're supposed to do, like ups and downs, like everybody else. Everyone has trials and tribulations, but it was only when everything was taken away from me and I was left with nothing, and I slept in my car and I slept in this men's shelter for 8 months and rebuilt my entire life. But rebuilt it with this vision and this purpose and this drive and this, man, I'm mean and hungry to do good. Like I'm like a dog with a bone. Like I want to leave my footprint. I want to do good at the grandest possible scale. And it's that struggle, that rigor actually allows you to achieve what you fully want to achieve. And I guess from a well-being point of view, which I know is so much the core of what you do. I think it's how do we do that in education to allow students to have the right amount of challenge, support and care and nurture and look after their well-being, but give them enough challenge that they can stand on their own two feet and reach their full potential, just like that butterfly.
Oh man, there's a lot there that you just mentioned, and that's an amazing story. I had no idea. I assume a lot of people don't have that idea of what you went through, and that's an amazing story, and well done on getting through that tough time. And as you said, it's made you a lot stronger, and I guess it's put you on your path where you are today. But oh mate, that's a very emotional story, and I really appreciate you sharing that. And
that's all right. I know your listeners won't be able to see, but if I hold my hand up there, you can see my arm is like literally covered in goosebumps. Actually, I held back a little bit on the darker sort of side. It's obviously, you know, you're not always having good moments when you're doing all that sort of stuff, but it was that period that gave me this drive to make my voice heard. And it helped me understand that people, teachers in particular, teachers are hungry to connect with authenticity, learn from each other. And we are built to want to do good, and we want to help as many people as possible. Like not every teacher is a saint, not every teacher is perfect, but you know what? A lot of them are. And you give them the right opportunity when they're not overworked, when they're not stressed, and they will do anything they can to look after the kids in their care. And now I get to do that. You know what? I did that in a nerdy way for as long as I could whilst I was teaching. kind of COVID killed off Aussie Ed. But then I got some really great opportunities with the New South Wales Department of Education during COVID to do some crazy, crazy cool strategic things, like the Learning from Home Hub and all that sort of stuff. And on the other side of that, HP sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, we've got this desire around the world to do this concept called Reinvent the Classroom, but they wanted to really have a good, serious think about what does good digital teaching and learning look like?
Mm.
And they needed some people to be the voices of that. So there's a whole bunch of people like me around the world who are championing good teaching practice.
Absolutely. It's an amazing story. And you're doing some wonderful things. We'll come back to that at the moment. But I just want to ask Brett, with you, you mentioned, like, obviously you got through those dark times. What would you say to a teacher who maybe, that's your situation, like, very extreme, and that not maybe everyone will go through that or been there. But everyone's challenges are at a certain level, aren't they? What would you say to someone who's going, or particularly a teacher at the moment, who is going through a challenging time?
Look, I think the first thing, even before I answer that, like, everything's relative, right? Like, I taught in a refugee school for about 2 years when we were bringing into Australia a lot of kids out of the Sudan. Mm. So a lot of the children that I taught had either been in, although they were Sudanese, but they probably weren't even born in Sudan, although they were in Sudan when they were very young babies, and they had grown up in refugee camps in either Kenya or Uganda before they were then brought into Australia. And you hear stories of what these children went through. And then you go, my story's nothing compared to what these kids are doing, right? So I think trauma and challenge, it's all relative. And you can't sort of compare one person's struggle with another person, because you know what? Struggle. Like, struggle's a struggle. Like, what do I say for people who are having a hard time? Like, look, we all know. You know, I'm one for storytelling. I'm one for storytelling. And I think when we feel overwhelmed, firstly, surprisingly, more teachers are in your shoes than you realize. So
definitely
feel free to look around you at your school or online. The community online, the education community online, whether that's your podcast or your LinkedIn or Insta or whatever, it's more supportive than you might realize. It's more supportive than you might realize. So connecting with teachers who are in a similar struggle is actually easy if you are ready to put yourself out and talk online. And that's not everyone's thing. But for those people who do want to do that. I was going to say, no one in education is Robinson Crusoe. Like, I don't care. Yeah, we hear all the time, like, oh, my child is unique and my school is unique and this school is different culture to the school down the road. Yeah, all that's true. Heaps. Yeah. Yes. Everyone's an individual. Everyone's unique. 100%. But it's so surprising. Like, I get now, so my first book ended up becoming a bestseller in three different countries. And as a result of that, I get to go around and speak at keynotes and conferences and stuff like that around the world. So I've seen a few other systems. I've talked to teachers from around the world. It is so surprising, because we're told so often that every school is unique, every child's unique, every class is unique. It's so surprising how similar the challenges around the world are. Everyone has politicians that are trying to regulate funding, analyze and change curriculum. Everyone's got that. Like, everyone's got, you know, a school system that they live in that's got rules and regulations about how you can and can't teach and how you can and can't behave. And then everyone's got parents that are either very, very supportive of, overly supportive, inverted commas, overly supportive of their child, and then neglectful of their child. Those things are true for every single system. As much as we're different, we're actually very, very much the same, and we're all kind of in the same trench fighting the good fight. So there's a lot to learn from each other. And there's brothers and sister teachers all around the world who are doing something very, very similar to you. So feel free to reach out.
I appreciate that. I'm hopefully people will take you up. Whether reaching out to online or other teachers, or I think it's really important. And just to go back to your what you're mentioning about with HP and the reinventing the classroom, how does that with technology or within what you're doing at HP, how does that relate to wellbeing, and what wellbeing or positive education practices, how can technology and wellbeing or positive education, I guess, combine to help teachers teach young people wellbeing skills?
Yeah, look, I'm going to say three things. Yep. I'm going to say three things. One, I'm going to talk to you about the best example I've ever seen of, and the reason why I'm on the team of pro technology is very good for schools. Mm. I also want to talk to you about like sort of some possibilities from a technical support a point of view about what's possible from a well-being. And then I'll talk to you about some of the risks, particularly with AI, that's coming into the whole AI world.
Yep.
I think if we just do those three things, that might be, I'm just warning you, I guess, because you probably noticed that I like to talk to you. I think the first, however long that answer was, you asked me one sentence and I went for God knows.
No, that was great. Keep going. Yeah.
I do joke around. Obviously, Salakis is my last name, so I've got a little bit of a Greek heritage. I do joke around with people because I don't know how well you know your Greek mythology, but on all of the islands, different gods came from different islands, right? Or spent time on all the different islands. So the muses, the muses were the ladies that told the stories of all the gods, told the stories of Mount Olympia and shared that all around. They actually come from the island that my family originate from. So I always say to people, I don't know, maybe there's a little bit, maybe a drop of the Greek gods, maybe a drop of the muses, some long line descendant of the muses runs in my veins, because I do like to tell a good story.
And you're very good at it too, mate. Love your stories.
So the best example I ever saw, and I was still teaching. I was actually I'm a primary school teacher by trade. Yep. I'm in year six, and I had a boy in my class who was being reintegrated into mainstream schooling. He was high functioning autism, or had he was high functioning and he had also autism, but very, very difficult. If I gave him a pen or a pencil to write, he would do maybe like a single sentence in an hour. Like, he just couldn't do it. He'd walk around all the time with these big massive thick textbooks, like the thickest textbooks you could imagine, things that I don't even know where you get them from, like not in normal modern libraries, like crazy sort of huge big ancient Bible type of looking things. Always carried one and was always like looking at it. But the special education teacher, I remember asking her once, I said, can he read those or can he understand those? Absolutely not. He can't read them at all. Like, he was on a like the reading level of a kindergarten kid or a year one kid sort of stuff. And she wanted him to read these tiny little books that had, just a few words per page and big picture and all that sort of stuff. I just couldn't get him to do it. Like, he wasn't interested. He just wanted, and I thought, oh, do you know what? I'll let him flick through, because what's the harm? At one point, about halfway through the year, a new feature was coming out on Google Docs, and it had the voice to text button. And I allowed this boy, when we were doing writing time and any written work, he could do voice to text, and he would effectively type out his entire thing. I would let him print it, and then he could paste that into his workbook, and that could be his written work. And it was like I'm gonna pretend it was awesome, but it was one gigantic big vomit of ludicrous page long paragraph. But compared to what he would do with a pencil or a pen, it was light years ahead. A couple of years ago, that boy actually reaches out to me on LinkedIn, Mr. Salakis. I just want you to know, I'm about to defend my thesis. I'm going for my doctorate in physics. So he successfully defended his thesis, got his PhD, and then he comments, and I'll be honest with you, he still comments in a quirky, weird, unusual way. Every now and then he'll comment on a post on LinkedIn. It's like, okay, thanks, that's interesting perspective. But he's now like an associate professor at Macquarie University. Oh. Lecturing in physics. Like, he's probably the smartest kid I ever taught. Yet if I was to believe what I saw when I gave him a pen and he would write one sentence, or believe where he was pegged at with his reading levels, he was a child who wasn't capable of more than a few sentences worth of reading or writing. Yet down inside, there was obviously a lot going on. So when you talk about well-being, when you talk about reaching your potential, when you talk about unlocking what's possible, I don't think I'm aware personally of a real world example that tells a story better about how the appropriate use of technology can unlock and do good for a child in our care. So that's that one.
Yeah. I just love how you said appropriate use of technology as well. Like, that is a perfect example. And actually just got maybe those big thick textbook things, maybe you actually was reading them.
He was. 100% he was. 100%. He was reading those big, crazy, big, thick textbooks. They were all science stuff. Yeah, I forgot to actually say that. Yeah, they were all sciencey things. He was reading.
Knew what was going on.
University level textbooks.
Oh, that's amazing.
When he was supposedly a reading age of a D1 kid or a kindy kid.
God, that's amazing.
So that's a good story.
Yep.
The second is the work that I saw. A guy called Rob McTaggart, who some of your podcast listeners may or may not know. Rob is often behind the scenes. He's based up in regional New South Wales in Newcastle. But Rob McTaggart, look him up on LinkedIn and whatnot. He had set up in the early days of COVID, when Teams was just starting to roll out and lots of systems were rolling over to Teams. And they go, I just realized I've been very diplomatic there in my role of HP, because I've said a nice story about Google and now I'm about to say a nice story about Microsoft. Getting, look at that balance. But so he set up in Teams at on the back end. They have sentiment. You can set up so that the AI or the inbuilt tools can actually gauge the sentiment of the language that a user is using. So as a teacher, you could engage with your student. And this is very common. Marketing uses this a lot. Like, it's baked into a lot of the stuff in Facebook and everything, so that they can take all of our information and advertise to us more effectively and stuff. But there's sentiment detection. But you can use sentiment detection from a well-being point of view. During COVID, I saw the trials of it. And basically, I could message, or a teacher theoretically could message their students, and you could get like a sentiment detection back on how they could respond. And so if the child was responding in a really, a way that breached a threshold, then you would know, well, their well-being is at risk. And then you could actually proactively, rather than reactively, actually reach out to them and check that they're going okay. And I think that's one of the challenges in the well-being space. How do we, react to students' well-being after there's been an incident, or when, once they're showing signs of great stress and all that sort of stuff? But how good if technology can help us predict and preemptively intervene to help a child before they've got to a certain level? So there's my second one, and I think. The third one is with all the development of AI and the proliferation of AI across chatbots and all that sort of stuff, I think what I have to say there, I worry about what I call AI grifters. I think there are a tremendous amount of people who are suddenly positioning themselves in the last 2 years. They've had nothing to do with AI, and they're suddenly positioning themselves as experts in AI education. And they're advising schools, they're advising systems on what to do. Now, AI in education has not been around long enough for anyone anyone to claim to be an expert in AI and education. It doesn't happen. I've been doing it for 6 or so years myself, 6 or 7 years. I wouldn't even pretend. I wouldn't even begin to dip the toe in to say I'm close to some sort of an expert. Like I know the tip of the iceberg. So it really gets, it really unnerves me when I see people who are inexperienced in this field, positioning themselves as experts, and then having scores and having systems actually react and respond under these so-called experts' guidance, these AI grifters. And I think it's putting potentially our students at risk. And I say this from a well-being perspective, because I think if we were to look at, you know, the effect of social media on our teenagers, I don't think there would be too many people who could argue that social media has had some detrimental effects on well-being on a large percentage of teenagers in Australia, if not the world, right? I think that's a fairly non-controversial statement. Like the scale of the problem, yeah, sure, we can debate that. But I think there's a lot of us would say, yes, there has been an issue there and there are challenges there and there's nuance and that there's difficulties and that things we need to do. And obviously at the moment, with all the debate and the waiting for the legislation and having social media at 16 and older and all that sort of stuff from a federal government level, these are all things that are happening now 10, 15 years after the first social media started to roll out. I wonder, particularly with these AI grifters who are starting to give false snake-oiled narratives of what to do, of what schools should be doing with AI, I wonder if in 10 years' time we're going to go back and go, well, wouldn't it have been good if we actually took the time to actually put in some proper proper restrictions and, well, not restrictions, probably the wrong word, but proper careful selections on how to roll out AI so that we do things from the best possible well-being stance for the students in our care. I think we are now at the precipice with AI that we have an opportunity to do things well. And to me, it mirrors very much of where we were about 10 years ago with social media. So I hope that the lessons we've learned from social media are learned properly and applied to AI. But I think there's a lot of races happening across different jurisdictions. And I think people are so eager to be able to say, we're the first, we're the best, we're on the tip of the spear. We're making some short-term ill-informed decisions around AI and education.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I know that some of the listeners do know that Growing with Gratitude, we're working on an AI tool now, but I just want to confirm something here. Don't claim to be an expert, and it's a tool for teachers to help them teach, not for students.
Yeah, so good. I think that's it. So like, but that's it, right? Like we're all explorers with this AI tool. We are doing our best. And I think this is, and this, Ash, this is probably where you come. This is the angle I'm assuming you come from. Like you and I both have an education background.
Yep.
Right. Like we have lived education for years and years and years. We are not making, I'm not going to position myself as an AI expert, but man, I've done decades worth of time in the trenches in education, particularly in education technology. So I know what some of the traps and pitfalls are with education and technology, and that can be applied to the AI sphere, and you can make the best informed decisions you can about what's going to be there. Like I work for a big tech multinational. AI is like the hot sauce that's dripped on every technology tool that's coming out there. Actually quite like the approach that HP has, and it's quite similar to the approach that you've got. It's not the front and center. It's actually leveraging it, do what we do good, but just do that even better. That's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly sums up what we're trying to achieve with the Wellbeing Wizard, what we're putting together. And I really appreciate those three points, mate. That's some really good information there that listeners can also take away and think about. Now, we've had a great conversation so far. I've just got one more question I want to ask you. And this is about your book, A Mammoth Lesson. Can you tell us about that and how important is it? Emotional connection and narrative in engaging both students and teachers, especially in today's fast-paced and tech-driven classrooms. What Well, first of all, tell us a bit more about the book and maybe, yeah, if you can just elaborate on
How's
that.
How's this? Do you want the exclusive?
Yes,
because
please.
I have been working on a new book that is due out in a couple of weeks.
Excellent.
And I am yet to publicly release the name of that new book.
Yes, mate. Have you got it or
you're
not?
Would you like to be the very first public place that I say what it's called and I can give you a little hint of what's about to come?
Yes, absolutely. That'd be amazing.
World exclusive.
World exclusive.
You heard it here first. Okay, so the book's actually, do you know what? Funny that we were joking around with being a descendant of the muses and a storyteller, because this book is all about story and AI. And it's inspired by Aesop's fables, like the boy who cried wolf and all that sort of stuff. So effectively what I did was I sat down and I looked at every single AI issue that I could think of, AI in education issue. What sort of every, I mean, a big list on a piece of paper, everything I could think of that maybe was to do with AI in education, and then I started to write Aesop or Aesop, depending on how you pronounce it. Inspired fables about it. So the idea here is if I'm a teacher or I'm a principal and I want to do some professional development on, say, the bias in the data set of AI, I want my teachers to be aware of the bias that exists within the large language model data sets. That can be a pretty heavy conversation to explain. So what I've got is, here's the topic. This is the issue, data sets. Or the bias in the data set. Here's a short fable that in a style of Aesop sort of tells a metaphorical tale that matches that concept. And then I've got a few thinking questions that make you ponder, well, that issue, how does that affect my school, my teaching, my the learners in my care, all that sort of stuff. And the idea here is that a principal could photocopy a couple of those pages, give that out at the start of a staff meeting, 5-minute read, everyone has a read, and they go, okay, I now understand this complex concept in a more palatable way. I kind of get it now that I'm ready to dive into those deeper conversations. That's what I did. And the book's name is Fable, but spelled F-A-I. B-L-E.
Very good.
Able with the AI in the middle there. But
that's fantastic.
That's it. It is gently trying to unpack a lot of really, really complex issues with AI and education in really bite-sized, palatable, easy to understand stories.
And where can people pre-order that?
Well, not yet, because I literally haven't even shared all the publisher. I use a publisher in Canada.
Yep.
The publisher hasn't. Oh, it's still, to be honest with you, actually, I'm still going back and forth with the editor.
Yeah, sure.
The edits.
It's coming.
It's coming soon.
Yeah.
So it will. It'll be out probably in about 6 weeks' time. Really, maybe 8 weeks tops.
Yep.
But it'll be on Amazon and all that sort of stuff. So you'll be able to find it on Amazon.
Brilliant, mate. That's fantastic, and I really appreciate your time today, Brett. And
world exclusive for
you. Absolutely, it's world exclusive. It's all happening. Brilliant, and when I was younger, I wasn't a reader, but in the last 10 years, I'm a big reader, and I look forward to getting my hands on a copy of that one.
Love it,
mate. Where can people reach you? Whether that's a website, I know that you're on LinkedIn.
Yeah, look, LinkedIn's probably the easiest place to find me nowadays. That's the easiest way to get to me. I do have a little bit of a side hustle called Mammoth Learning, so you can go to mammothlearning.co. But look, I'm the HP education ambassador. So you can go to hp.com.au/RTC, which is Reinvent the Classroom, RTC. And you can find me pretty easy. And if you're doing something cool at your school and you want a little bit of support from a big multinational and you think the skill set that I have or the skills or the equipment that HP can bring or the resources that HP can help amplify you doing something wicked awesome at your school, let me know. And if it's awesome, we might be able to find a way to collaborate.
And just on that, like we were talking before, just before we started recording, and you work with a group who is literally at the moment recording this on the 17th of April, 2025, in NASA.
Yeah. So actually, this is a really cool STEM project that we got involved in. So I actually met the principal, actually the principal of this school, Hastings Secondary College. And so a regional public school in New South Wales, up in Port Macquarie area. She saw me speak at a keynote last year and then reached out and at first asked me if I could work with the New South Wales Principals Association, which I did, or the Secondary Principals Council, which I did. And then we just developed a friendship. And we were able to start doing some stuff at her school. And they've got a great STEM program, a great robotics program. And just doing some STEM and some robotics, was able to get them some very, very nice support from Intel. And the school themselves, I think you commented, Ash, when we were getting our warm-up, that you saw me post this on LinkedIn. Yep. I was actually at the airport, and I may have bought the largest amount of chicken nuggets that I've ever purchased in my life. I think I got $80 worth of chicken nuggets so the kids could smash through while they were waiting for their flight. But they actually won the Australian this robotics tournament a little while ago, a few months ago. And as a result of that, they're representing Australia live right now in the US, actually at NASA in Houston. Representing Australia and this World Robotics Tournament. So fingers crossed they go really well, and soon we'll have another round of world champions in technology.
Absolutely. And now, don't be shy, reach out to Brett, and I'm sure that be able to help maybe just in the same way that they did with the Hastings students as well.
Wherever possible. I love to help. Wherever I can, I love to help.
Brilliant, mate. Really appreciate your time today, Brett, and lots of takeaways for everyone.
Too easy, my brother. Great. Always love getting to talk about what I'm passionate about, and I hope your listeners were able to get something out of it. I just feel sorry for your listeners that, unlike you, who got to see, gaze upon this beautiful face for the whole hour that we've talked, they've just had to, they'll have to console themselves with just listening to the beautiful deltones out of this voice.
Mate, I did take a screenshot, so I'll make sure that people get to see our heads.
You didn't tell me when you were taking the screenshot. I'm going to probably have my mouth half open, my eyes closed, my tongue out sideways. What are you doing to me? It's ridiculous. No, warn a man when you're going to take a screenshot.
Mate, you're a model. You're working any photos.
There you go. I could have given you, what's that in the movie? I could have given you the blue steel look.
Zoolander.
Zoolander, blue steel. missed. All right, all good.
All right, beautiful, mate. Thanks for your time.
Have a great day.